Spirits will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I will try to fix you.
And we're back. We put on our hard hats, we have our tool belts and tool cases, and I don't use my hands much. I'm not very mechanical. What are tools? Welcome to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. And I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike here. How many mics does it take to change a light bulb? Many, but wow, that's the worst joke
ever. I was wondering where you're going. Did you have
it? But we could fix the Oscars. We could change the Oscars.
And that's why we have our hard hats on. We are fixing the Oscars today. Now, look, this has been a big thing that has come out in the last week. You've seen a lot of think pieces on it. You've probably heard a lot of think pieces on it. People putting forth their efforts of how to fix the Oscars. What's wrong with this best popular film category? Why is this
our half
happening?
Episode almost went viral. I mean, it was those
people clicked
close
on it. Yeah, people liked it. We addressed the issue with it as a breaking news segment when it first came out last week.
Gave you our guttural primal reactions to it.
And so after having it, we kind of purposely wanted to get that out there and then marinate on it.
Yeah, an hour afterwards we got it out.
Yeah, that's the quickest we've ever, well, not anything, but anyway, we were quick with it. And we wanted to marinate on it and kind of build up our ideas and bat some things back and forth about how we would fix it. And we, in that time frame in the last week or so, we've read a lot of, well, you know, The Ringer, Next Best Picture, IndieWire, all these different outlets.
Variety, Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah, big and small.
Yeah, we scoured the internet. And in many ways, we were able to take everything that we like and we don't like, and then we totally blew it up.
Come up with our own things, and we're geniuses. We've done it. We fixed the Oscars.
We did.
We're going to get into our takes of what we would do to, quote-unquote, fix the Academy Awards, talk about, again, this best popular film category that's new, and we're going to be quoting stuff and citing stuff along the way that we have read, give credit to different sources and people. But this is, I think we can say, this is a pretty unique take. These are not exact. I mean, some of these you've heard, but for the most part, I'm going to say this is stuff that's pretty unique and original from us.
I've heard a few things suggested in different forms, but the way we're going to propose it today, this is unique.
So hopefully this is something that you guys can attach to and get your money's worth out of. Just as a means of a refresher, three big changes. The Academy came out a week ago and said, hey, we're changing the Academy Awards. These Oscars that have held up for 90 years now, we're going to do something a little different.
Board of Governors did it at a meeting behind the scenes.
Without running it by, apparently, members of the Academy, which they did some members of the Academy, but regardless, here are your three big new changes.
Did Meryl Streep know?
I think she was the one that actually wrote the letter, as a matter of fact. The first change, we're keeping it a hard 3 hours. Some of the awards are going to be done in a video package that's presented later in the show. They might be given out during commercials, etc., etc. Hard 3 hours. We're not going beyond 3 hours. Number two is the 2020 Oscars are going to be moved up to February 9th. So instead of being at the end of February, beginning of March, like they usually are, they're going to be moved up to February 9th. Mm-hmm. Number three, the biggest, most important one, we're adding Achievement in Popular Film category. And everybody's wondering what the fallout exactly was from those, and what does that mean as far as the Best Picture race goes? Why are they doing this? Obviously, it's to kind of shine a light on these popular blockbuster type films, but what are the pros and cons of that?
The last one you mentioned has gotten the most backlash, has gotten the most, you know, talk, and we're going to spend the majority of this episode focused on the best popular film category and how we'd fix it another way. We do want to hit one quick retraction, like all the best journalists out there that we think we're on the level with.
We're nothing if we're not professional.
Once in a while, we have to retract a little something that we got wrong. And I think this was like 90 minutes after this thing, or an hour after
this
thing broke.
It was really soon after,
we were recording, and you edited in record time. Within 2 hours, we had that episode out. So we didn't catch this one little diatribe we had, and it was fairly brief. But the big point, or the big takeaway, is when they moved the Oscars up in 2020, they did not change, as far as what they written down, they did not change the voting deadlines, the voting dates. So we were talking about how can all these professionals, working professionals, watch all the movies in time if they have 3 weeks less worth of watch season. That's not going to be a factor. Now, we'll talk about it later, and a lot of folks have been weighing in on this. Yes, campaigning changes. Release dates will change. Those late December releases probably won't happen. Yes, the critical punditry and all the consensus building that happens based on the precursor awards, all that stuff's going to adjust as well. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that'll necessarily be thrown into a tizzy, but we do think that's going to be changed a little bit.
Yeah, we as a society always adjust well on the fly, right,
to major changes? Exactly. Even though it's a year and a half, 2 years away, people are not going to have the strategy down, and we, as film Twitter, as punditry, as part of the Hollywood news world, we're not going to be able to adjust and form the consensuses as fast as people
can sigh.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to form those consensuses, which the flock of sheep that the Academy can be would follow. So basically, we have to get our crap together as pundits and as critics sooner than the rest of the folks. But everybody else has to adjust as well.
Less lead-up time, less anticipation, less time to kind of stir the stew and create storylines. Could be a good or a bad thing. I guess that'll remain to be seen.
So speaking of storylines running amok, Mike, do you think after all this backlash, the Academy is going to go through with this? Because the Ringers, Bill Simmons, and a lot of people have mentioned, Hollywood Reporter Scott Feinberg, Tapley from Variety, they've all mentioned the fact that the Academy could always walk this back. They could always say, all right, we floated it out there. You've universally rejected it.
Which was, I kind of thought that was the thing at first, but now that a week's passed and we've heard nothing but reaction and dead silence from the Academy, it seems to me, at least at this point, I would kind of assume they're going to go forward with some version of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's exactly going to be a best achievement in popular filmmaking as it is. They may also float out the ideas for what defines a popular film and see the reaction to that before they actually decide to pull the trigger or not.
Right. They're very vague in floating this out there. And everybody's been aggravated by not understanding what the category really means. And therefore, the category insults everybody.
Right.
The Oscar pundits, it insults the best picture.
I mean, you're one of the only people that I heard speak positively about it. And you still came from the perspective of if everybody plays nice and it's idealistic and it's the best.
Well, I'm doubling down on that today later
well,
on.
It's a nice notion. I just, there's so much potential bad and cynicism that can devolve out of this that I don't, I'm still not crazy about it. But as far as will the Academy go forward with it, it wouldn't shock me to see them do it and then not have it in the 2020 Oscars, but I do think, at least for this year, they're going forward with some version of this.
Couple quick stats as we transition here. Titanic had 57 million viewers during the 1997-98 Oscars. Lord of the Rings, 43 million viewers. Shape of Water's Oscars last year had 26.5 million viewers.
Now, dip.
Why is that happening? A lot of smart people have weighed in and said it's more than one reason. Right now, the reason that everybody's running with is the fact that popular films are not nominated anymore because of reasons we'll get into. The fact of the matter is TV ratings have gone down across the board, and there's some smart people out there on film Twitter that have said the ratings have gone down for the Oscars about as much as the ratings of TV has gone down. The only ratings that are getting higher and staying the same are the Super Bowls because it's such a TV event still.
Right. It's basically a holiday. A national holiday is what the Ringer on there.
And we talked about last year in particular on the heels of election, we gave a whole political discourse on why, you know, half the country's turned off by this. We're not going to get into that today. Listen to our half-sode. I think we got some intriguing theories on that.
I think that's undeniable, too. All you got to do is go on any internet comment section to see how pervasive politics has been with people's viewing habits.
So it's clear the Academy wants more popular movies. They've named the category after it. They're now going that route. We'll talk about a Disney conspiracy theory later. But Mike, you have some stats you want to open this up with in terms of the last few Best Picture categories and blockbusters that have survived the nomination process.
It's funny to me that where we are as far as big movies making the cut and being nominated. So talk about the last 10 years. I mentioned this on our last show. The last 10 years when they opened up the Best Picture voting to 10 nominees possibly. Right. There's only been a total of 6 films that have made the cut, being nominated for Best Picture and also finished the top 10 at the box office worldwide. So it's only happened 6 times in the last 10 years. That's crazy. That's nuts. The last, it hasn't happened since 2015. The Martian, which also had no shot at winning that year, was the last picture to be nominated that finished the top 10 of the box office. I know a lot of people want to talk about budgets, film budgets. We're going to get into that as we go. But in the last 3 years alone, there's been 26 nominees for Best Picture total. And we've had a total of 4 with a budget of $100 million or more, or an estimated budget of $100 million or more, that have actually made the cut.
So Hollywood's pooling all these resources, all these dollars into its, you know, tentpole films, and yet all those, all that talent isn't equating to award nominations.
Right. And we talk about the Marvel movies, the Avengers movie, these $300 million budgets, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to get into why I think budgets is a kind of a not great tent pole to market to understand all these things as. But
right.
Regardless, talking now, the highest budget, the most amount of money for a budget amongst the past 26 Best Picture nominees, so the last 3 years, was $150 million for Mad Max Fury Road. So we haven't even crossed the $200 million threshold for a Best Picture. And it's a tough sell to say that the quote-unquote blockbuster movies, the popcorn movies, popular movies, haven't gotten significantly better as films, right? I mean, we're not dealing with Battlefield Earth anymore as a blockbuster movie.
The Academy said they want more movies like, quote-unquote, Baby Driver and the Planet of the Apes trilogy to be up for Best Popular Film Oscars. Now, I would agree with Baby Driver.
We know.
Planet of the Apes, I'm a little, you know, up and down on. I liked a few of them. I didn't like them all. My thing is, you have some of the best moments of any given movie-going year in these tentpole films. There's some of the highest production values, never mind.
Yeah, oh, without question.
And I just want to, I had this whole homily planned about why I love big tentpoles, but basically I want to boil it down to this one analogy. You have Spider-Man Homecoming and you have a Lady Bird. Those are two coming-of-age stories last year.
Yep.
Can you imagine if at the end of Lady Bird, Saoirse Ronan was bit by a radioactive spider?
I mean, it would have been interesting.
And then you had to make a sequel of Lady Bird 2, which we talked about in See by Skip.
Lady Bird, the Spider-Man.
Bird Lady. Now, can you imagine if Lady Bird had to be a coming-of-age movie and a superhero film? Can you imagine all the action sequences that they would have to record and plan? Can you imagine how they would have to work that into the plot of all those dramatic and poignant scenes and sequences? Can you imagine the number of supporting cast members that would have to be ethnically diverse and appeal to all age groups? Just think about everything a blockbuster tentpole film has to do. And that is not even in the realm of possibility for an indie film. To me, it's as unique a filmmaking process nowadays, now that they've really honed in on what works so good. It's from films like It to The Last Jedi to all the Marvel films. This is as unique a process, filmmaking-wise, as an animated feature. And I think you can make that very clear with another category that we'll think about changing this one's name to, Best Popular Film's name to, later on, to tease that. But I think, in my mind, it's so unique a filmmaking process, tentpole movies that are done right compared to these indies.
I mean, you're not wrong at all. You're absolutely right. It is a unique process. And the fact is that to be considered for such high praise as an Academy Award, you still got to get it right. It's not like, oh, here's a $300 million budget, it's not going to fail. We've seen them fail time after time. It kind of goes back to what I just said, though, that we've gotten to this point where the blockbuster films have to do so much, but still put on a great story.
Right.
They have to compete with these smaller indie dramatic films.
Have you never seen Sullivan's Travels, you snobby Academy? Sullivan's Travels is shown to you on week one of film school because it is about the lowly comic film director going through on an odyssey and realizing that to delight the masses, to make people laugh, to give them popcorn entertainment is a noble endeavor. Do you not realize that, Academy and Oscar snobbery out there?
They taught that to you in, what, your third grade class? Your fourth?
Just so, yeah. But think about that done with The Last Jedi and how much we praise The Last Jedi for its substance. Okay, it had a goofy casino sequence that everybody hated, including me. But just think about the three-hour monster that film was. And you're telling me The Post and The Darkest Hour are better movie experiences?
Exactly.
They don't go at light speed and do what that The Last Jedi did? Are you kidding me?
And they didn't have Laura Dern. So,
correct.
So, yes, there is in the Academy doing this best popular whatever. I'm going to call it the Blockbuster Award for shortened sake. But in there doing this, they are highlighting something that should be highlighted, right? Not only is it going to bring viewers back to have the popcorn movies, the blockbusters recognized, but also there is a snobbery going on in the Academy that these blockbuster films are sometimes worthy of that recognition that they don't get just because they're blockbuster films.
Yeah, and think about it with another example here. If there wasn't a best animated film category, which Bill Simmons just calls cartoons, it's a really good cartoon. Coco's a really good cartoon.
I call it the Disney
would
category.
Coco have been nominated for a Best Picture Oscar? Maybe. But would the 10 previous best animated feature winners, never mind the rest of the nominees, which in my opinion deserve to be acknowledged on Oscar night because they're worthy,
yeah,
they're Oscar worthy in most cases. Yes, you get a goofy nominee every once in a while.
Absolutely.
In my mind, The Last Jedi, a lot of these Marvel movies, this year Mission Impossible, this year Black Panther, of course, and this year Avengers Infinity War, the big three right now, that I would say these are blockbuster films making billions millions for MI6 still. They deserve to be nominated for Oscars. And I think if you have to make a category for it, I would rather that at this moment than Baby Driver only gets nominated for sound editing last year. And Last Jedi gets nominated for best visual effects and loses to another great visually stunning movie in Blade Runner.
But I give Baby Driver its own specific shout out, but I don't think you're going to be happy with the result.
Well, we're building up to that. So, Mike, you have some approaches that don't work in regards to fixing this issue.
Okay, so I think the consensus anyway, is that this approach specifically is a bad idea on a couple levels.
Right.
But popular films should be recognized? Is that kind of the dichotomy, the push and pull we're working against? So how do you define what a popular film is? What are the ways you can weed out the films you want to nominate and have recognition? The most obvious marker for me that I've heard ad nauseum that everybody has said is total box office numbers. Domestic box office, worldwide, whatever you want to call
it. A problem for the, winter releases.
Well, that's one point, yeah. Where is the cutoff? How do you judge this for movies that have completed their theatrical home video run versus ones that were just released in December, November, like you said?
And as good as A Star Is Born is gonna be, correct?
Yeah.
That shouldn't be in this other category. That should be in Best Picture, correct? Because that one may make $200 million domestically when it's all going into, the end of the year. I would not be shocked at all. That trailer is great, if you haven't heard me say it.
Well, have you not seen it yet? It's been everywhere. But you made the biggest point that it hurts the movies coming out at the end of the year, but where's the line that you would draw on box office? Who knows what studios can do to inflate or deflate their numbers to fit any sort of mechanism? If you have a box office cutoff or gross cutoff of $200 million, $300 million, $400 million, where does that apply? When do you get to that number? Does that take into account Blu-ray and on-demand sales? That's a mess.
I just think it's really a mess because you can have a quote-unquote Oscar grab movie that is not what we're talking about in terms of tentpoles, $300 million budget tentpoles that are unique filmmaking processes, like I said. You can have A Star Is Born. You can have A Shape of Water, for crying out loud, make $300 million. And that would just be kind of sneaky way for that to get an extra Oscar instead of, nominating these
You're bringing up
these
so many
movies.
Points that I address, and I'm so happy you are. You're falling right into my trap. You're the Academy. Another one I've heard, number of theaters released. This is kind of a niche one. Obviously, the bigger blockbusters are going to be released in the more number of theaters, the higher number of theaters. We have Infinity War, which was released in over 4,000 theaters now for one of the first times ever, et cetera, et cetera. Again, I don't like the idea that the marker, the tentpole, the threshold, whatever you want to call this, to delineate what is and isn't a blockbuster slash popular movie slash whatever you want. I'm calling it a blockbuster. I don't like that idea to be in the hands of the studios, because the studios can't be trusted. Basically, they're going to do what they can do, rightfully so, to position their film to win an Oscar. Right. It should be up to the Academy or a third party, an uninterested third party, to be kind of the barrier, the gatekeeper yes. sure. of what films get in. So again, if we talk about number of theaters released, what do we do when a theater, when a blockbuster is released only to four theaters, like Eighth Grade was? It's not saying Eighth Grade's a blockbuster, but let's say Infinity War opened 8 theaters in its opening weekend, and it's, you know, per theater number would be astronomical, but right. it didn't hit that big opening number, so it cannot be called a blockbuster, but instead they could have it slide into Best Picture, and I hate that idea. I hate the idea of leaving it up to studios. Production budget is another big one that a lot of people have talked about. Another one I hate. Yeah, what is the production budget?
You can get an albatross.
What was
there.
The production budget of Waterworld?
Right, an albatross.
And what was the production of Waterworld before all the reshoots? And what was the production of Waterworld after the first set of reshoots? You know, the production budget is so fungible. Because like you said, there are big pieces that suck.
Think about the conspiracy theories. Like Solo, a Star Wars movie, didn't make a lot of money.
Right.
Right? It lost money.
Mm-hmm.
If it got critically acclaimed, let's say, but still nobody saw it, could you see, like, there being a backlash or a Disney conspiracy theory where that somehow gets a Best Popular
right.
Film
yeah,
nomination
absolutely.
At the end of the day? Yeah, I agree.
And
you can't do budget.
Exactly. And what is a production budget, by the way? I mean, if the threshold for a production budget for getting in this blockbuster category is $100 million, and we have a movie that's made $90 million, what's to say a studio can't slip their star another $11 million? There's $101 million, now you get in. It's so fungible and just awful. It's not a good marker about what the success of the film is or isn't.
And what if somebody makes a movie using like today's blockbuster filmmaking techniques? Maybe they don't have an army of craftsmen, but they have, you know, whatever resources at their disposal where they make something technologically wonderful. They do a Ridley Scott thing where for a fairly low budget, they do a Sam Raimi thing where it looked like it was going to be campy.
Use lighting
and it
more so than,
a
yeah.
monster hit. Right. And it's a technically sound movie.
It's a popular film.
And it's a popular film.
But it doesn't
film.
Hit that threshold.
But it
totally.
Didn't have the budget. So that's going to be disqualified now. And that's a problem.
I totally agree. And not to mention, hey, Mike, tell me the budget of any Netflix original.
Low.
Well, you don't know. They don't tell us, you know? And Netflix, I don't know if it's the same for Hulu and Amazon, but Netflix is notorious for not releasing numbers.
Right.
So they release, you know, numbers that they purchased licensing rights
for. Define budget, Michael. Do you mean my marketing budget?
Exactly. Exactly. That's another piece. So I hate the idea of production budget. And again, those are the big ones that I've heard suggested that to me scream out studio manipulation. And the studios would be in charge of positioning their films. The studios should be in charge of positioning their films for what category, if they can pick and choose what categories.
Right.
But I don't like the idea of that what on its face would seem to be fraud or deception. That's a negative connotation that you don't want aligned with the Oscars.
It's a can of worms.
Right. Thank you. You're very good at picking up the analogies
well,
that I can't
think
of. I got
the easy job. You're trying to get across a complex argument, and I can just, you know.
So yeah. Total box office, no. Number of theaters release, I don't like. Mm. Production budget, I think, is the worst of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that when I was sitting back thinking what works, those are the three most obvious that, to me, just have glaring holes and can be exploited most easily.
And Marvel can be like, yeah, I don't count this suburb of Atlanta that we bought 10 years ago as part of our budget.
Robert Downey Jr. is doing Iron Man 5 for free. We just gave him a 5% stake in the company.
Right. Yeah, you can get around that. It's like a salary cap in sport.
Exactly. You're exactly right. It's like a cap manipulation. Now, aside from all that, which are kind of options of thresholds to delineate what a blockbuster film is,
right?
Because we're getting all the negative out of the way first. We have something the Academy has been doing the last couple years, which we have proven doesn't work, irregardless of any kind of best popular film, just with the best picture voting as it is, and that's the preferential ballot.
And again, our thesis statement is the wrong films are getting nominated for best picture in most years. These big films are getting ignored, and there's a prejudice against them, and somehow The Darkest Hour and The Post are seen as better achievements in film than The Last Jedi
right.
and these other movies that are just 1,000 times better in my mind, in my grades, across the board.
And guess what? In the casual viewer's grade.
Yeah. So,
which is who the Oscars wants to appeal to.
Why is it happening? In my mind, and I'm going to explain this a certain way, when you have 10 nominees and we only allow 5 to be voted on in terms of Best Picture balloting, that's an issue. And IndieWire, Ann Thompson, she on that podcast there, does a great job talking about preferential balloting and how it has screwed over the most popular films of yesteryears as Best Picture nominees.
If you are a student or a disciple of the Academy or the Oscars in general or award season like us, the phrase preferential balloting should make you throw up in your own mouth.
Well, the reason, yeah, the reason for it was, and it screams negotiation tactic to me within the Academy's Board of Governors. I think the reason behind it was when they went to 10 nominees to hopefully get more popular films nominated, which has not happened.
Keep coming into my trap,
also,
Michael.
Yeah, they also did it like a counterbalancing thing. And it, again, it seems like a negotiation. Some sucker agreed to it in the Board of Governors because independent films with preferential balloting have an advantage. They are less widely seen, fact of the matter, right? The less widely seen film by the Academy, by the general public, by the consensus builders out there in the media, the less seen film can get preferential 1, 2, 3 place votes, and the strength of those votes can bring it into a nomination, and then, of course, it can get a win from there. Something.
And because they're less seen, obviously, the more seen movies, the bigger the blockbuster movie, the more polarizing it's going to be. That's just a fact.
And another obvious thing to state is that I don't think these tentpole movies have been maybe top 5 movies in every year. I think they are top 10 movies.
Sure.
Often. And I would say, like, Avengers Infinity War, that's going to be a top 10 movie. Last year, to me, The Last Jedi was a top 10 movie. If I have it in terms of my favorites, it's higher. But in terms of, you know, achievements in film, and if I'm an Oscar voter, I would vote on it as, like, 7 or 8, right? So the fact that they cannot go past 5.
Yeah.
And the fact that they can, you know, make the preference in terms of the weighted ballot and vote on these movies that they want to win, that they want to set up for wins. And a lot of those times it's the, you know, indie darling for a lot of these critics. That equates to the less popular film typically winning these last few years since this was instituted. I got some stats for you now.
Give it to me. I love numbers.
The Best Director category does not have a preferential ballot. The winners of the Best Director category the last few years have been from Gravity, The Revenant, and La La Land.
Right.
So these movies are fairly popular.
Of course.
All three of them. Mm-hmm. All three of them did fairly well at the box office. All three have done better at the box office than the winner of the Best Picture category, which is the weighted ballot. 12 Years a Slave, small film. Solid box office at the end of the day for in terms of its budget, not a huge blockbuster in any stretch of the mind. Spotlight and then Moonlight.
Yeah, Spotlight, $20 million budget, $45 million box office. Moonlight, $1.5 million budget, $27.8 box office domestically.
Right. So you can agree or disagree with the worthiness of those as Best Picture winners and Best Director winners. That's fine. But the fact of the matter is the more popular director has lost out to the lesser popular film. And Ann Thompson and IndieWire, their thesis statement is that it's because of preferential balloting.
Now, preferential balloting made sense once upon a time, when the Academy was smaller, when it was less diverse, but here's where preferential balloting really makes no sense to me. You just had this groundswell, grassroots push to diversify the Academy. Right. You're inviting all these new members in. You're trying to get every nook and cranny of Hollywood, writers, producers, actors, stuntmen, key grips, whatever. You're having them come from all walks of life, all backgrounds, and all different heritages. And you want that to shine. Why are you going to handicap or pacify their vote by giving a default selection when you get the compromise candidate that isn't really reflective of what happens?
Right.
When did we get to this point where a popularity contest isn't what the Oscars are? That's exactly what they are, isn't it? And if it's not, then why is every other category decided by popular vote? And this is the only one that isn't. It makes no sense to me.
True. I mean, look, I get the fact that they're looking out for the little guy. It makes no sense in terms of the Academy trying to get more popular films nominated number one and have them win to get the ratings, if they're pushing for ratings and then they put that caveat in, makes no sense. So everybody who thinks conspiracy, the Academy always wanted popular films, but the actual membership has been voting against them. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think there's a strong push on the Board of Governors because this was put in as a rule decided upon by the Board of Governors.
Keep it a popular vote. Like most things in life, keep it a popular vote.
I would tend to agree with you, and I think people are...
I would say if it's good enough for the presidency, right, it should be good enough for Best Picture, but it's not good enough for the presidency.
The more youth... I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. The more youth you put into the Academy, the more diversified it is. Now you're getting more people seeing independent films, and I don't think with the Twittersphere the way it is, with the media the way it is, these movies can gain traction much faster. Like, Get Out last year.
Yeah. Without question. Without question.
These movies don't stay hidden for as long, unless it's a late release or whatever. It's going to be much more rare, so I don't think they necessarily need this level of a handicap or this level of an action to help them. I think that you should still have something in there to protect the indie, sure, but not something to this scale in my mind.
And here's a point in layman's terms. If you're doing preferential balloting for something that you're calling the best, aren't you just really picking out which one is the not worst?
Yeah.
Isn't that the difference? Like, preferential balloting, you're taking the highest ranked amongst all the top three votes, basically. You're taking the one that people don't want last. So you're not taking the one that people want first.
That's true. I wonder if... Or the one that gets the most top threes, not the top one.
Exactly.
So you won't get the exceptional movie, but you'll get the one that get the most fours and threes.
And
everybody thinks it's a four and three.
Yeah, it's a compromise candidate. I think that could have been
what happened this last year. Totally agree. Water. That probably got the most threes and twos, but the Get Out, the Lady Birds got the most ones.
And
the Three Billboards got the most ones.
Keep saying it's such a mistake. Get Out, when 10 years, we're all going to say, how the hell did Get Out not win this Best Picture?
Yeah,
this just dawned on me.
But Get Out, Lady Bird, Three Billboards definitely got more ones than Shape of Water in my mind.
I think there's no question.
Now I wonder, Mike. Yeah, I wonder if they did preferential balloting through top 10, if that would solve this popular film dilemma. If the popular films would get nominated, if you had a top 10, because everybody would slide The Last Jedi as number 8, The Dark Knight as number 6, the 7. You would have a Marvel movie like this year, Avengers Infinity War, would be at 9 or 10 on everybody's list, right? Would that change it?
I don't think it would help blockbusters. I think preferential balloting, I'm sold on the idea that preferential balloting is just guaranteed to lead to the middle.
Yeah.
Or the middle of the top. Basically, it's right. Not going to give you... Since when is going by popular choice a bad thing? Especially by... It's going to give you storylines. The whole point is for the Oscars to be talked about. It's going to give you that kind of fodder. Why would you not want that to happen? Why are you trying to worry about making everyone go home happy or contented, I should say, when you can make some people happy and some people furious?
It's like everything the Academy does, the opposite comes to happen. Because... They try to, give the independent film a hidden advantage.
Right.
And yet we're going to have that number three, everybody's consensus number three, Oscar-grabby, medium-budget film win more often than you get the independent film that everybody gives ones to. So it worked for Moonlight. And I'm in a way, I'm happy it worked for Moonlight because that's a damn good movie. And there's no way everybody saw Moonlight that year.
No way.
Just based on the size of it. So... The fact of the matter is, it does help that indie to win. There's
of course
no question
it does.
About it. But it also enables that number three movie, that
candidate
to win a lot too.
There's an easy fix also for preferential balloting. We'll get into it later during the Oscars fix.
So, a last second Hail Mary before we really describe our solution, your solution really. I wanted to say this. Mike, could they salvage this situation by just changing the name of the best popular film category? Later on, we're going to describe more categories that we would bring in. But right now, you're calling it the best blockbuster. I had that written down here as well.
Yes. Could they salvage the situation? I think...
Come up with a name that doesn't offend everybody.
Right.
It's hard.
I think there's something to that. I do think the idea that you're calling it achievement in popular film, which is how it was laid out in the Academy note that went public.
Right.
I think that does offend some people inherently.
Our friends at Next Best Picture called it a pity category, and it makes some sense to me. Like, it's the pity best picture. It's the second tier best picture. It is a category that also somehow offends the best picture folks because, oh, they're not popular enough to be voted there.
It's a
double edged sword. It hurts everybody, and then because it's quote based on popularity, it's also something that is saying to the public, we're voting on popularity instead of artistic merit.
Yeah, I thought the original name of it was, oh shit, we don't want Black Panther to be representative of us for Best Picture, so here's a pity Oscar.
So what about...
That's what I thought the official name was.
What about Best VFX Driven Film? And that's what Next Best Picture suggested. I had Best VFX
Film.
There's
something to that, because we've been on record here numerous times talking about how the visual effects category, you could and probably should delineate by budget or some kind of monetary standing, yeah, because it's tough to put the Florida Project on the same level and the same playing field as Infinity War. Right. We've made that statement.
And
so
based on my argument on the filmmaking process, what distinguishes an Avengers Infinity War from a Lady Bird and many, or maybe not even Lady Bird, let's take a big budget regular movie. Let's just say A Star is Born had a $100 million budget. Whatever, it doesn't. But what distinguishes a $100 million superhero movie from a $100 million just epic romance? Visual effects. And you're gearing your filmmaking process to use and incorporate those visual effects.
Well, it's visual effects, sure, but I also think there's some practical effects that go on. Mission Impossible's budget was, you get a helicopter chase scene
so
out of it.
So that would be like a movie that would be left out in this category, and it would be tragically left out. Now you can make a caveat to say, well, it has some visual effects.
Right.
You can include practical
effects. Which is why I don't think that works. I think having a different name could soften the blow, could also worsen the blow, but I think we're just talking about semantics and aesthetics at that point.
Right.
You know, I don't think there's anything... I think making a separate category for anything to do with differentiating best picture and something close to best picture, like the best picture category, and then kind of best picture, I think it's a huge mistakes, and it waters down the Academy Awards in total.
And where I land, and we'll get into this after your solution, but where I land is that I'm glad that a visual effects blockbuster is going to be acknowledged at all in a major category now. But I would rather, my plan A would be to nominate the best movies of the year in the best picture category, including a couple popular films a year, because to me, in my top 10s, I got a couple popular films in the last 15 years. I got a couple in each year, and you have the solution for
awfully
this.
Awfully similar to something I thought up of. So yeah, again, I took a week to marinate about this, and I was thinking, how do we get everyone satisfied? The Academy wants the casual viewer. The Academy snobs want their independent films that they think are technically superior to be shine and given their spotlight. But everybody wants everyone to have their moment. Everybody wants to keep, they want ratings to go up, but they don't want to overshadow The Darkest Hour. They don't want to overshadow The Post.
And on that point, Mike, when Thanos does something in that great visual effects scene at the end of Avengers Infinity War, and I'm just like, that takeaway for me as a moviegoer is as uniquely important as me choking up watching Lady Bird and watching that movie strum my heartstrings.
Right.
The different feelings, but the emotions that
They both matter.
Yeah. Correct. Thank you.
Right. So I understand the thesis statement is something you're supposed to give up top and then work off it, but I've always found if the thesis statement is something I disagree with, I tune out anyway because I'm a bad person. So I'm going to work towards my thesis statement right now. Again, we first expanded the Best Picture nominees from 5 to back to 10, because it was 10 back in the early 30s and 40s anyway, back to 10 as a means of, as a response to The Dark Knight basically being shunned.
Right.
As a means of hopefully including more blockbuster films, more popular films, et cetera, et cetera. The history isn't really something to brag about as far as the Academy accepting, quote unquote, these big blockbuster movies. Ever since expanding to 10 a decade ago, there have been a grand total, like I said, of 6 films nominated for Best Picture that also finished in the top 10 of that year's worldwide box office. Has not happened since 2015's The Martian, and it's only actually happened twice in the last 7 years combined, with The Martian and 2011's Gravity. In the last 3 years, the 26 Best Picture nominees, the highest production budget, like I said, was Mad Max at $150 million. Only 4 total films had a budget in excess of $100 million. And again, budgets aren't good standards because they're only estimates. I can still only find estimated budgets of films released in 2015, 2016. So we don't know what budgets really even mean outside of the fact that a $100 million, $300 million budget movie can easily be discerned from a $20 million budget movie. So, with that in mind, 20 others had budgets estimated around $40 million or lower of those 26 previous Best Picture nominees. Wow. So, we're talking about 6-ish a year, 6 or more nominees a year for Best Picture have a $40 million budget or lower.
And to dive in here like a rodeo clown, I think Netflix's operating budget was something in the billions, where they had several billion to purchase a bunch of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, just think about all the billions of dollars being spent and all the resources being bought, and then therefore all these movies with tiny budgets, it's only going to the quote-unquote indie films now. Just the bias is totally skewed in the opposite direction.
Totally
when
true.
When you have all these popular films that are also really excellent films, I just can't jive the two.
Yeah, you make a great point there. The overall idea is that you have these 6 or more per year that are quote-unquote traditional Oscar noms, right? That's what we've been averaging anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Come in at less than $30 million budget, less than $40 million budget, et cetera, et cetera.
That's still a lot.
It is a lot. Take those. If that's what the Academy's been averaging as it is, take those. Have 7 slots, 7 Best Picture slots, nomination slots, are reserved for quote-unquote traditional Academy nominees. The other 3 films, since you can keep these 10 nominees, the other 3 slots, I think, should be reserved for these quote-unquote popular popcorn, I'm going to call them blockbuster movies.
Right.
So what is a blockbuster movie? How do we define that? That seems to be everyone's big linchpin. I propose that blockbuster movie could be a movie that makes $30 million or more in its opening weekend. Why $30 million? Well, one is we already live in a world where 2/3 or 70% of the Best Picture nominees, as I've said a couple times already, are low-budget properties. And again, I don't like going by budget, but they are $40 million or less estimated. So those are low-budget films. If you have the threshold be a $30 million opening weekend, it's like 2 different sides of the same coin. One is being made for around $40 million. The other one makes that amount of money, or at least in this case, 3/4 of it, in its opening weekend. And you add to that fact that $30 million is kind of a nice catch-all for quote-unquote popular movies. Of movies that opened, according to Box Office Mojo, with an opening weekend of $40 million or more, only 8 such movies failed to bring in a domestic gross of $100 million that fell short of that $100 million plateau. So if you take the $40 million opening weekend and give a little more leeway, that's why I say bring it down another $10 million, make it a $30 million opening weekend, you're going to pretty much cast a wide enough net to catch anything that could be considered a popular film, which is clearly the intent of making this new category to begin with. They want to include pretty much any popular film they can to get casualized on the product. So that's reason number one. All those are reason number one. 2, $30 million is kind of an exclusive club. There's only been 529 movies in history that have $30 million or more in their opening weekend. The easy counter argument to this coming up is that, well, don't a bunch of terrible movies make $30 million in their opening weekends?
Yeah, but it's achievement in popular film. It's achievement in Best Picture. It's Best Picture, for crying out loud. You don't have to vote Transformers.
Right. This isn't a threshold that you automatically get in.
Yeah, you don't have to vote.
These are just the options. It narrows down the options of films that could be in those 3 slots. So something like The Lion King came out. It made $40 million in its opening weekend. That only accounted for 12% of its overall gross take. High School Musical 3 came out. It had $42 million its opening weekend. That accounted for 46% of its overall domestic box office.
Right.
Nobody in their right mind is going to argue that High School Musical 3 is on the same level as The Lion King. The numbers kind of weed themselves out. This is a way of weeding out the most popular films, but also the best popular films. Mm-hmm. In a way that being nominated for this category in and of itself is the Achievement in Popular Film Award for these films.
Now, I think you can add another caveat or another easy fix to those years where the popular films aren't great movies. There's not three of them. You can curb this a little bit. But what if there's a year where there's no Black Panther? What if there's a year where there's no... I mean, this year we're spoiled. We have three movies that are on the level AA- for us right now, right? Three blockbusters that are awesome and, you know, substantive and mean a lot in terms of production value, or have a lot of production value. So what if you have a year where you don't have that? You can easily have a grading system where people have a grading system for these popular films, and if it doesn't achieve a high enough grade, it won't be voted in. You can do the same. This also helps animated features, by the way.
Yeah,
it also helps
certainly.
Animated features, and I'm going to discuss kind of how I would approach this maybe later, but I love where you're going. Keep working.
The idea that there may not be a worthy popular film is, my response to that would be, that's not a concern right now, because
it hasn't been in a while. But
the Oscars wants to get casual eyes on this, on their program.
Right.
They need
so
people to come back.
But if you're a bougie film critic like us, it's still a concern. Because what if there's a year where it's all DC level movies? We don't like them.
Well, then they don't get nominated. I mean, this is easy. This is really easy to delineate. Nobody's nominating Justice League. They're not saying Justice League is a Best Picture nominee. They're just not. Mad Max, that would be a Best Picture nominee. Mm-hmm. Django, which barely made $30 million in its opening weekend, that could be either a traditional Oscar Best Picture nominee, or it could be one of the three reserved slots for a blockbuster nominee.
I think
nominee.
We're both agreed, but what if in one of those years, there's one movie that's quote-unquote Oscar-worthy, is what I'm saying, or there's two movies and there's not three that are Oscar-worthy.
Oh, yeah, the three
film.
Is the max for the blockbusters.
But you can put some kind of caveat in there if they don't get a certain level of the vote, or if they don't get a certain grade, or they don't get a weighted average, or they don't, whatever, you can fix that to where...
Well, I, those three, this is why priority balloting, again, would be taken out of the equation, because to me, those three slots, those three reserved slots, you could have it be a straight up popularity contest. Give it to the Academy at large, have them vote on it, and have it be treated like the Baseball Hall of Fame induction, like you said, a grading or a certain number. If it doesn't get 60% of ballots, it doesn't make the cut. They can pick any of
but
the big blockbusters they want.
They can still say it's like relative. There's a relativism in there where you're comparing it against a weak field. Like if there's a year of a weak field. Like we've seen this with animated features.
Yeah, they,
for whatever
you don't
reason.
Need to have. But right. I think the incentive is there that you want these movies. You want to have at least one a year, probably.
True.
You want to have at least one a year. And we haven't even come close to that. We've had six in the last 10 years.
Right.
We're averaging almost one half of one per year.
True.
So you want to have at least one blockbuster a year that the casual moviegoer goes, gets eyes on the Oscars, and then says, oh, look, Shape of Water was nominated for all these other programs. I've never heard of that before. Maybe
yep.
I should go watch that. That's where this push, this chain of events leads to. And that's why I think the incentive would be there for the Academy to have at least one blockbuster a year. And if you have three slots reserved for these blockbuster movies, and you don't have a, you have a year where there is no blockbuster, guess what? You get more think pieces out of that. You get more anger at the Academy out of that. You get more talking about the Oscars out of that. As long as, I mean, if you can prescribe to the notion that no news is bad news, right? So as long as people are talking about it, it's a big deal. It matters. It keeps your award season going year round. So what about the films that fall through the cracks now? Okay, let's say $30 million is the threshold, a $30 million opening weekend. What about the films that fall through the cracks? The beautiful thing about this approach, as I found and I kept researching, films that fail to make $30 million, but went on to have big successful box office runs anyway, generally were considered for the Academy Awards as it is. You have things like Bridesmaids. $26 million opening weekend. It wouldn't have made the blockbuster threshold that I'm talking about.
Right.
But it was nominated for two Oscars as it is.
So the surprise hit based on its word of mouth, based on its critical merits, that just blows everybody away and overperforms, but it's not a VFX masterpiece like you're saying. Bridesmaids, The Sixth Sense,
Creed. Yeah, totally.
Those typically get noticed by
right.
the Academy.
They get noticed in one form or another. And guess what? This isn't an exclusionary list. There's seven other slots they could be nominated in if they're Best Picture worthy.
Right.
It just means they don't go in one of the three blockbuster slots. And 7, again, as a reminder and a means of recap, is more than the average Best Picture take has been per year anyway. There's been less than 7 films per year nominated for Best Picture that are low-budget movies. This is giving them, this gives you an extra slot or two of wide berth for that surprise film like you just called it. E.T. made 11, I mean, I'm going back 35 years now, but E.T. made $11 million in its opening weekend, went on to gross $300 million domestically afterwards. Obviously, E.T., if this were to be held in today's terms, because of how much the Academy has evolved, would be a Best Picture nominee. It wouldn't be in the blockbuster slot. It would be in one of the 7 slots.
Now, I wonder if you can somehow categorize the best popular films and force them into their own side, because this would be interesting and this would be a major incentive for the rest of the, for the Academy, number one, and for indie film lovers. If you put the popular films in one voting bunch, right, where you're voting on best popular film and the top three make it into the best picture category. Again, you can go 2, you can even go exactly. 1. You know, you can lessen that because I'm sure a lot of bougie Oscar critics now are vomiting in their
this
mouths.
Admittedly, this is the first year we have 3, at least as far as you and I go.
Yeah, that's why
blockbusters.
Three.
Well, no, I'm saying 3 because 7, because of the other side of it. I'm saying 3 because we've had 6.66 on average of other traditional Oscar nominees.
But the incentive to this would be you have 7 that are going to be indie films or lower budget movies every year.
Yes.
And if you somehow, like if you're worried about the seesaw turning and it all going popular films and the bias going in the totally opposite direction, and we flash forward 10 years and we got Batman v. Riddler and we got all these movies that are just popular films getting nominated for Oscars and everybody's, you know, apocalypse comes true.
Jim Carrey, of course, reprising his role in that film, yes.
About the MCU and all the, and then all these indie films are being ignored, if not never made, oh my God. We're all freaking out about that. So you could protect that fact by saying, all right, 7 are going to be under certain budget.
I think the
7 have to be under a $75 million budget.
Absolutely.
You know, you can,
but again, I don't like doing the budget thing, but yes.
You can have all the stipulations you want.
Sure.
You can say all, you know, 7 of these nominees are going to be under a $100 million budget.
Cap the blockbuster side, if you want. I mean, my concern was that blockbusters wouldn't get enough recognition, but you're right. Traditionally, it's been a struggle to get blockbusters in, but cap the blockbuster side if you're worried about them overtaking it.
Right.
I have in my notes, I would have it be a hard 3. 3 is the most. And guess what? If there's more than 3 blockbusters that get that come out in a given year and could be up for Best Picture nomination, God bless them. I would let them in because I think that's a good way to evolve the program as a whole. I would let them in and have them be, you know, have your 3 main blockbusters. Anything that doesn't win is still up for those other 7 categories.
Right.
I wouldn't have it the other way. What I would keep from happening was having 8 indie films, 9 indie films, and 1 blockbuster. I would have the indie films be capped at a hard 7.
But it's fascinating.
That's my take. And again, you're obviously a proponent of the other side. You see the other side happening.
Well, I think this, they would never in a fajillion years go for this.
I agree.
3 out of 10 blockbusters will never happen. And I'm looking at the last 3 years in terms of worthy films. A couple years ago, you had Civil War. I mean, you can go back and look at the top 5, you know, blockbusters that Next Best Picture, Matt Neglia, he posted. He did a whole Twitter thread. It was fun. And he had top five every year that he would have nominees for the best popular film. You can look at those and say, all right, 2, maybe 1, sometimes 3 are Oscars worthy in terms of quote unquote best picture worthy.
And here's the beauty of what I'm proposing. I went through Matt's list, Impartial, Entertainment Weekly had a similar list. The Ringer suggested a bunch of films in their podcast. I went through a lot of those. 90% of those films would qualify under these 3 slots and would have to be weeded out that way.
Right.
And here's the beauty of you weeding those films out this way. Here's the beauty of the 7-3 blockbuster threshold split is what I like to call this. My blockbuster threshold. You hit the recent averages of smaller budget movies being more than 6 per year. You get to hold steady to that. Those seven slots cannot be touched by big budget studios. You get the definite definition of what a blockbuster / popular film / popcorn movie, whatever the hell. What that is, it's not something the studios can manipulate. It is, according to the theaters, it's $30 million domestic gross in your opening weekend. It's defined, it's definite, it can't be, it's not really up for being cajoled or payola. There's a way certainly studios could do it, but ideally, you're keeping it honest and just going by the movie receipts.
Right.
You're rewarding said blockbuster based on its popularity because it's a measure of the ones that keep crowds coming back, as well as rewarding them for their opening weekend impact. So the ones that people go to see and keep wanting to see over and over again because they are such quality films, those are the ones that get pushed to the forefront of this. Those are the ones that are going to make the threshold, and they're going to make the best picture category. And it keeps spots reserved and provides an incentive for the Academy to fill them with blockbuster spots. You don't have to worry about losing the audience from watching this because you have these spots reserved for these popular films, these films that everyone does know. You get more casual eyes on the product, people are going to watch more movies. People that come for Avengers Infinity War are going to end up leaving, probably seeing a First Reformed or something of that ilk. Much to your dismay, I know, I'm sorry.
But it's the first wrong one example.
It's the
wrong
first one that was on my top of my head. So those are the big goals and the big pluses of this. And most of all, to me, you're not giving studios the power to dictate their own terms. They can position however they want. It's up to the people to decide what a blockbuster is, just like it's up to the movie-going public in general to decide what a successful movie is by dollar amount. It's up to the people to decide what they want to see, what they want to see pushed on the program. Tell me where this fails.
Well, here's where film Twitter's reaction would be to this. Again, three would be way too many for them to handle. Based on the guys we know and we've talked to and I've heard talk about this, three would be way too many, so I would say maybe two, and if you put the caveat that a best animated feature, which fits into your rules and regs here, an animated feature would likely be one of the two, so you'd almost get your best popular film winner, quote-unquote, and your best animated feature winner in the best picture conversation every year. So that's a fun thing, you know,
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
You're saying three is too many, but my counter to that, just based on math, is that three is not, I'm not taking three spots away from the traditional Oscar films. That's what the Academy has shown me in the last couple of years is left over once they're done deciding the best of these independent films.
Right.
Because there's only six that have been nominated every year for these low budget movies. So those three spots are there for other movies to be taken. Again, reminder, they haven't actually used 10 nominees for Best Picture since 2010, the first year, or 2009, the first year they went to 10 nominees. Exactly. Ever since it's been 8 or 9.
Well, which shows you that you need to meet a certain Hall of Fame ballot level threshold, and you can easily put that into this equation.
Yeah, Matt, again, on this Best Picture said, I think it was you had to be finished with 2% of your number one movie on the nomination balloting for Oscars to make the priority ballot. And I want to be crystal clear on this because I feel like I may not be. Those three spots are if you have three to fill. Like you keep saying how three is too many. I don't want three blockbusters every year. Three is the max. It's the max number of blockbusters that could be nominated for that year. Most years I would expect it to be one or two. Again, they would have to meet some sort of nominating threshold. In my ideal world, the Academy would get the ballot and it'd be all the pictures that had a $30 million plus opening weekend in that year. They would vote for however many they feel are suitable to be nominated for Best Picture, whether that's one or two, up to a max of three. And if a movie is on, say the number is 60% of ballots from the Academy, any number that are 60 or more get in. Any that hit 60% of the ballots get in. If you have, for some reason, multiple movies beyond the 60% mark, you take the top three finishers. And that would be a year you do have three blockbusters nominated for Best Picture. But I would assume, and the incentive would be there for there to be, at least one blockbuster per year, again, would in fact make the cut to be a Best Picture nominee. And that's honestly how it has been anyway and how it should be in these past couple of years. There has been at least one blockbuster, one quote-unquote popular film, that the argument could have easily been made, should have been, a Best Picture nominee. And that's where I think this fits in. It's a max of three. I keep saying that, but I wanted to be sure that that message is out there, and that's my idea about this. It's a max of three. I do not expect, were this to be implemented in my fantasy land, that there would be three every single year. You're right. As a matter of fact, I would expect it to be more likely one or two, likely only one, though.
But again, back to it, film Twitter and obviously the punditry out there and, of course, the critics, their reaction to this, in my mind, is going to be that it diminishes the best picture category worse than a best popular film additional category.
Oh my God, do I disagree?
That's what really? I think they would say. Yeah. Well, think about it. It would tarnish the best picture category.
In this way, in what I'm proposing, you're getting the best 10 nominees.
I agree with likelihood.
Right.
However, based on the bias that the Academy has had.
Again, I understand that.
You're working against their bias.
But the biggest complaint, one of the biggest complaints that I've seen about the best achievement in popular film category suggestion that the Academy put out there, was that it's watering down Best Picture to, like you said before, you have basically the consolation prize. The Black Panther, we can't have you representing us for Best Picture, so here's your consolation Oscar.
This is a unique year where you have a Best Popular Film.
I agree.
That is also a contender for Best Picture as of now. And we don't know what the rest of these films are going to look like.
But
yet, this is a unique year, I would say. I would look at the last 3 or 4 years, and I would say there was not... If a Best Popular Film had a slot in the top 10, or two slots, they would not be contenders to win the actual Oscar.
Here's my other argument. You watch the Grammys?
No.
Okay.
Honestly, a little bit.
The Grammys has Album of the Year and Record of the Year.
Right.
I would like you to tell me the difference between those two right now. Okay, exactly. So when you have enough Best Picture, if you have multiple things that can be seen
what plays
as
better
best,
in vinyl?
Yeah, I'm sure that's it. If you have, we're movie guys. If you have enough categories that seem like they're rewarding the same thing, all that's going to do is drive more casual people away because they're not going to give a shit. So I'm saying keep it all housed under one Best Picture category.
Even if you call it a pity category, the prestige of Best Picture is still there. Here's the thing. What if Black Panther wins Best Picture and Best Popular Film? We think it's worthy, and we talked about this, and I had a whole section of this episode that we're never going to get to. But here's the thing. What if the backlash to this whole Best Popular Film category is Black Panther gets some more votes, and again, it's top tier film, wins Best Picture, wins Best Popular Film. Is the prestige of the Best Picture category diminished by that?
I would like you to tell me the chances in your head of that happening.
I wrote it down in saying that the Academy is so bullheaded and there's enough time for this to gestate that if we don't get a consensus best movie, think about it, if we don't get Shape of Water, that everybody is a darling that everybody loves. And we got a lot of issue movies coming out, correct? We got a lot of vegetables coming out, correct?
What I'm doing by this is taking the odds of cynicism taking over away. You're using these as castles on the hill, as beautiful things to work towards, that there can be a dual winner of both categories. That is never going to happen.
Like animated feature.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's just not. I'm sorry.
Unlikely.
I mean, the cynicism is going to take over. It's going to be... We already see people splitting votes between screenplays and directors, right? When there's a writer-director.
Yeah.
There's never going to... Unless a movie is
idealistic,
the Silence of the Lambs that wins all big five, it's never going to win both of those. It's a way to split votes.
My idealistic what if is unlikely at best. Now, I would still say if it's a pity category in a year without Black Panther. If Black Panther didn't come out this year, this is most years, there's not a Black Panther. That's a popular film. That's also a Best Picture contender. Think about, 2 years ago with Civil War. And think about last year with Beauty and the Beast, Wonder Woman, and the Marvel films, and It, and whatever would have been nominated. You don't have a Best Picture winning contender amongst those films. As good as important a movie as Wonder Woman was, it's qualitatively not as good of a film. It's super bad.
You're
super
right. You don't have something that'll win. You said yourself, those movies finish in your top 10 every year.
Yeah, they should be Best Picture nominees.
There's going to be, I would argue, there's going to be one blockbuster a year that is worthy of being in this category anyway. So why not force them to pick between that blockbuster and the other indie ones?
As The Ringer said in their podcast, How to Fix the Oscars, which is kind of why we're doing it today, they said the whole problem is the Academy's taste because they're getting it wrong.
It's the snobbery. The snobbery is taking over.
They're prejudiced against the achievement in a popular film, as even though we hate that term, and even though everybody hates that term, and I am for popular films being Oscar worthy. We have a difference in opinion on how we'd honor them on Oscar on the red carpet there, but we're both for that fact. And The Ringer kind of hit it on the head. The whole problem is the taste of the Academy.
I don't know if it's the Academy or if it's but there's a lot of snobbery and nose in the airing going on, and I think it's just arrogance to suggest that a big budget production is disqualified from being the best story or best movie or most captivating film of the year just because a lot of money went into the visual effects or the talent to get on screen. Here's my final conflict or problem or dilemma. I call it the Baby Driver dilemma. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you highlighted
and
Baby Driver.
The Oscars earlier. The Board of Governors highlighted Baby Driver.
So recognizing that I'm trying to cover a lot of angles with this 7-3 blockbuster threshold split, what about something like Baby Driver? It finishes your number one movie of the year in 2017. Its opening weekend was roughly $20 million.
Yeah, so it's my favorite movie last year.
Falls short of that Oscar blockbuster threshold. It was only in the top two of the box office for a single week. So even if you wanted to delay out these other qualifications.
Yeah, it wouldn't fit.
My response is this. So of last year's 8 Best Picture nominees, we can probably agree that the weakest was The Post, right?
Yeah, Darkest Hour for you, The Post for me. We both had issues.
So of the 7 remaining Best Picture nominees, so those would, again, be your 7 traditional Oscar nominees, mm-hmm. which was Baby Driver better than on a wide... Which would collectively everyone agree Baby Driver was better than? I would say Darkest Hour.
But I would say both of those movies.
But we'd be in the minority, wouldn't we?
I don't think so. Honestly, if you tell me that the majority of people out there would have voted Star Wars The Last Jedi and Baby Driver, or pick your favorite blockbuster from last year, if they did not have a blockbuster above Darkest Hour and The Post on their top 10 list, I would be shocked and appalled.
You just made my point. So now flip Baby Driver against the blockbusters of last year. Was Baby Driver easily better than It? That's a big argument. Was Baby Driver easily better than Spider-Man?
Yeah, that's
big argument.
It's my favorite movie. It's not.
So this is my point. Yeah. These movies deserve. I mean, Baby Driver again would be one of the 7. It would be relegated to the 7 traditional Oscar, and maybe it doesn't make it there, and maybe it's not fair.
Well, that's what makes this argument so loaded. It's because there's a wealth of riches now,
right?
In how these tent poles have been turning out and how these studios know how to make them now and how they take all these independent film talents and give them the hundreds of millions of dollars at their disposal so they can make a film. Ryan Johnson goes from Brick to $300 million property.
Russo Brothers.
Brothers go from Community to multiple $300 million
properties. And they nail it.
Properties.
And they get nothing.
Would any of us be surprised if Jordan Peele or Greta Gerwig, they do a big budget film and they knock it out of the park in the future? If Bo Burnham does one of those?
Of course not.
If Ari Aster does one of those and knocks it out of the park?
Don't you want these Oscars to be a moment in time, a legacy? I mean, without question, it's a point The Ringer made as well. I know we keep going back to that, but they did make a fair number of points. The Oscars are kind of the only award show that are still fantasized and romanticized about, right?
Right.
Because they mean something to so many people. Don't you want them to be kind of the guardians of film history?
True.
So this does that. You can't have film history without blockbusters, and you can't have film history without showing the evolution of film. And the evolution of film right now is that blockbusters are a big fucking deal as far as stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that's, again, you can easily fix this or idiot-proof it, or if there's a bad year of blockbusters, you can proof it to where it has to have some threshold of quality and grade that it gets into the best picture category. Yeah. You do it in other categories. You can easily do it there.
So that's how you fix best picture, and I'm a genius.
No, it's awesome.
I'm the greatest person ever.
I think it's...
Tell me I'm smart.
I think you're smart.
Thank you.
I think
Tell me I'm the smartest.
I think you're the smartest.
Yeah.
But I don't think the smartest... I don't think it would ever be 3. I think you may get get 1 nom or at most 2 if you basically said that you're going to get an animated feature if it's worthy. You're going to get a best popular film if it's worthy. I thought of this while we were recording today because I have a bunch of rapid fire questions to ask you to close this podcast out.
I'm terrified right now. Go ahead.
And this is the craziest suggestion ever.
All right.
What if you turned the Oscars into the greatest reality show in the history of reality shows? Better than the Super Bowl, better than anything. And you said you keep these categories, best popular film, best animated feature.
You're getting
best
dangerously picture, close to something best I foreign thought of, film. Keep going.
What if you have a tournament of champions on Oscar night and you make the voting public, which we're going to talk about in a minute, and you say the top three best pictures, all right, the best animated feature winner, the best popular film winner, and the best foreign film winner. You make everybody in the Oscar audience, you make everybody in the Academy at home text in their winner on the spot, live, like the greatest reality show okay. ever. Will you stay up for that? I would stay okay. up for that. Tournament of Champions, who wins the additional Oscar for the Grand Poobah Award?
Okay, here's my response. One, that would never happen.
Never.
I know. I had that same thought, but in a little
that's
different
too crazy
way.
Crazy for you.
Bracketing, right? Yeah. Who doesn't love brackets? That I had the same thought. Be like, who wants to be a millionaire? Where you type in on your keypad in the audience, and you give the suggestion, you have a whole round robin thing. I love it. I'm in. Sign me up.
If the prestige of the best picture winner is affirmed with this, if it wins the yes. Grand Poobah Award that I'm calling it, and if the prestige of the best picture loses it. Again, the Academy's voting. I'm not saying make it a public vote.
Pumbaa isn't Pumbaa, but I feel like the final Oscar should be given out by a grown man in a full Pumbaa, Timon and Pumbaa outfit every year.
We're talking about this topic way too long.
We have more serious stuff coming up, by the way.
All right, is there a Disney conspiracy theory on the best popular film? A lot that's been very public.
I'll say
Disney
no because
owns
I want
ABC.
To see my wife and kids grow up. Listen, it's popular, right? A lot of people have said that the Animated Feature Award was just for Disney. And now it's ABC that went to the Oscars and says, you guys got to change shit up. And that's why they're having this Best Popular Film Award, because Disney's going to come out with all these Pixar movies that aren't going to get nominated for anything else except for maybe these popular films. It's tough to stand by and say Disney has no influence here. It's tough to say this isn't to appease Disney.
Okay, so what actually happens to Black Panther, do you think? Is it a sacrificial Black Panther lamb? It's terrible writing. Terrible copy. What happens to Black Panther? It wins Best Popular Film and loses Best Picture. Is it nominated for Best Picture?
So I've gone back and forth with this in my head. I think there's no question it doesn't win Best Picture now if they go forward with this popular film category, which is the biggest shame of it all.
Yeah.
So I think it would be nominated for both. It'll probably win Best Popular because they're making the category basically specifically for it. It should. I don't notice. It should be not. It should be up there for Best Picture. I hate this category, but yeah, it should be up there for Best Picture.
Where I land on Black Panther is right now, it is a top tier film for me. You can argue about taste. You can argue about this and that. It is Oscar Best Picture worthy, and it's contender worthy as of now.
I agree.
You know, we'll see. If Mary Queen of Scots, Widows, First Man, Beautiful Boy, no. If they're all great.
You're not having 10 films better than Black Panther this year.
But so it's going to get nominated, we think. But now it's going to just be a nomination instead.
It has no shot at winning Best Picture if this achievement in popular film thing goes through.
Here's what I wonder, though. Knowing their own academy the way the Board of Governors does, knowing the voting likelihoods of movies with huge budgets not getting nominated and only, you know, 100, you know, the Dunkirk getting nominated, the Martian once every 2 years, was the academy worried, Mike, that Black Panther would not get nominated for Best Picture?
That's
because, again, it may finish as the number 6 film on everybody's top 10 list, right?
And I heard that you're not the first person to suggest that. I've heard other outlets have that same concern. My response is, shame on the Academy if that happened. And they deserve the backlash of another Oscar so white movement if they're going to be irresponsible enough.
So they were
enough.
Terrified Black Panther wouldn't have been a Best Picture nominee. So it better come away from right. Oscar night with an Oscar nomination, if not an Oscar. Were they terrified of that?
It's on the Oscar, the Academy in general, to make sure that doesn't happen. Isn't that the fucking point diversifying the Academy?
Again, knowing the preferential ballot rules and the top 5 votes only.
Then you get rid of the preferential ballot, assholes.
But knowing that it's there, are they thinking at the end of the day when the votes are put down on paper, electronic, whatever, when the votes are finally put down, they Black Panther would be out of most people's top fives. It would be in most people's top tens, but it's not top five movie for all the beautiful boy votes, for all the those other movies that we mentioned.
Probably. It makes a lot of sense.
So were they terrified it wouldn't have been a top five movie for people, and therefore would not have been a Best Picture nomination, and would have went into Oscar night with only a Best Original Score nomination or Best Costume Design nomination.
And it would have gotten chastised, and rightfully so.
And the Oscars would have been killed for
that,
correct?
Would have been the Oscars' fault for having an Academy that reflects those views. You're the one letting these people in. They don't just fill out a sign-up sheet, right?
All right, so we talked about the best popular film category forever right now. I want to ask you, Mike, what other categories would you add? Best stunt work, best breakthrough performance?
So I have an answer to that, but I'm going to answer a question you didn't ask first. In line with getting rid of the preferential balloting, in line with controversy creates cash, you want the Oscars to be viewed by more casual viewers, you want the Oscars to be a more year-round thing, you want award season to take hold, you want conversations to be all throughout the summer and fall as well, not just March, February.
Hell yes, Oscar podcast here.
Why don't you take a page out of the NBA's book and release information on your off season that will spur conversation and controversy, and think pieces, and articles, and podcast fodder? Release your voting. Release your... I read that the priority balloting happens because the Oscars don't want to run the risk of the Best Picture winning only having 15% of the vote. You know what happens if the Best Picture winner had 15% of the vote? That means second place probably had 14%, third place probably got 13%, fourth place probably got 12%, and guess what? You have a neck-and-neck race all the way through that creates all sorts of storylines as fallout. I think it'd be great if the Best Picture winner only had 15%.
A, for punditry, for our what we do here, this would be the greatest thing
in the
history of mankind. Now, think about it from the Academy's perspective. Yes, you once in a while you have the fun horse race that's super exciting, and they can release those results. And when the Academy votes, quote unquote, honorably, or in a way where they would be honored at the end of it, right? They vote honestly.
Right.
They'll be looked at in a flattering light. What if the public winds up thoroughly disagreeing? Never mind the critics. But what if the public, this could be
both. Why is that a bad thing?
When the public thoroughly disagrees with the Academy, they write them off. So it just, it's almost like more egg on their face.
Why is that a bad, I haven't heard why that's a bad thing. So you adjust
the next year. They just have to understand, as the Academy, that they're opening up a whole new world of shit.
Like, what you're saying to me right now is that the Academy, and you might be right, the Academy as an institution fears criticism so much.
Right.
And that might be right. That may be the explanation for all this. My response to that is, what institution is around right now in America that fears criticism so much that has done well? Guess what? It's not our administration. Hate to say it. It's not big corporations. Those are already being thrown garbage at. Take the criticism, embrace it, turn it, embrace the controversy.
The thing is, they know this is a subjective, taste-oriented.
That's what makes it great. Yeah, you're
vote.
Right. I know.
And
so keep the voting private, but release the balloting is my response and what I have written down, actually. You shouldn't know who Jennifer Lawrence ranked as their top 10 pictures, but you should release in general.
Still, reflective or projecting the Academy's taste,
if
they could wind up with so much egg on their face.
If your overall argument with me is that this will never happen, well, then I agree.
Look at Crash.
It's not going to
look at Crash and Brokeback Mountain. Correct.
Right.
Everybody's consensus favorite going into that Oscars was Brokeback Mountain was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if the Oscar vote? And that was my pick, honestly, that year. Can you imagine?
Because I'm a cynic, but yeah.
Can you imagine if that vote came out, was made public, and Brokeback Mountain was sixth on that list?
Guess what? You'd have us yelling about it, and it'd be great for us. And
it'd be terrible for them. So
but
they
it
just,
wouldn't be.
They don't want to open themselves up to that.
You can't be talked about
year-round.
They would
be vilified.
You can't be talked about year-round if you're not willing to be criticized. You're not going to be a pop culture phenomenon if you're not willing to take criticism. Tell me a famous person that is criticized-free. That hasn't faced
criticism. I'm just saying, in a popularity
contest. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm actually agreeing with you. You're right, because I think they do fear that criticism.
But if you want
to be the year-round institution, like the major sports are, you want to be one of the big live events, you got to take your licks. Roger Goodell, Adam Silver, Gary Bettman, Rob Manfred, the commissioners of all four major live-action sports, they get killed year-round. They still make a lot of money. People still tune into their stuff. People still talk about them all the time. You got to take the good with the bad. But that's my soapbox.
At the end of the day, more critics should be voting for these Academy Awards.
Just let us run it.
Yeah, just let us be the Academy. Yeah. Turn us into the Academy. Exactly. This way, they just have to make movies. They don't have. I know this is the Critics' Choice Awards. I know this, but you know, let the Ringer. I know it's the Golden Globes.
We'll let
I know this.
Casual Cinecast, Next Best Picture. Those guys can come in. Variety. Some people. Yeah. You started this diatribe of me losing my shit for was only like the fifth or sixth time this whole episode. About what categories would I like to see added. And I have a couple fixes for the rest of the presentation. You want to present other awards, the quote-unquote lesser awards, in a video package? I say present them on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook Live. Let people have access to them because their families deserve to see their acceptance speech and see what they have to say. I would say put those awards on live in real time in some outlet.
The issue that everybody's having with that is in the past, the craftsmen got their time. We already said this on the first episode. They got their time in front of the world in the middle of the broadcast.
Right.
Not in prime time, maybe, but in the middle of the broadcast, too. You have their moment in front of the entire world where they're on somewhat equal footing with the best actress, with the
best
director.
And obviously, I mean, the subtext here is that the Academy doesn't want that.
So here, yeah, it's bad.
They don't value it.
Well, here's the obvious thing. When a non-entertainer gives a speech, it usually, 90% of the time, is awkward and shitty, in my opinion. That's my opinion.
Yeah, but that also provides
it's awkward. I think they should get their moment.
I get it.
So here's my fix now. When the best actresses and actors give it, a lot of the time it's shitty. Now, there are moments that really stick out that are wonderful moments. I want to preserve that, you know, spontaneity. Why don't they, one, pre-record speeches for most of the non-entertainer winner? Okay. So you can take the five best sound editors, you can record a 45-second speech, you can give 15 seconds while he's hugging his friends, and while you have, you know, specs shown of who's his agent. You could do a classy version of an NFL profile.
But that's not them winning.
Big
Brother. That's not the Academy Awards.
I'm saying you can easily do it classy. And have
but you don't get the emotion of the win.
Golden. No, he's going up there to say something.
But he's not winning.
He wins. The sound editor wins, Mike.
You're saying pre-record all five guys.
No, I'm saying pre-record their speeches while he's walking up to the stage, which on average everybody says takes 30 to 45
seconds.
And
my response is that those speeches would lack the emotion of the actual win. Because they
I'm
would be pre-recorded.
This. The pre-recorded speech starts to play. It's a 30-second speech. All his
thank yous
that he would give are being flashed on the screen. You
they
do
started doing
screen,
that last year. We agreed with it.
Where
yeah.
you could say the agent and the management company, all that. So when he goes up there, he doesn't have to thank him. You can even have those on your family
so
list.
So he just says his piece in live when he goes,
so
I guess.
When
you.
He gets up there, yeah. he's already got 30 seconds of pre-recorded thank you, and then he can have his moment in front of everybody. You can even have an applause. Applause break after his thing finishes and time it. You could totally time this out where you got 90 seconds and all he gets is like to say a few sentences,
right.
30 seconds. He knows that, but he knows he already pre-recorded the bulk of what he wants to say
Now that I understand what you're talking about, I think it's a great fix. I also think it was heavily influenced by the early days of Monday Night Raw when they had those pre-interviews about the guys walking towards the ring and they showed them in a separate box. That's neither here nor there.
I probably watched those early days of Monday.
That's definitely a subconscious.
Subconsciously,
yeah.
that thing
but
happened to me.
I think we both find common ground here in that don't take these guys' moments away. Find out there's a way in which you can give these guys their moments.
Totally
still,
do that.
And fit it within the telecast. I'm not necessarily against the hard 3 hours either, by the way.
No.
But there's enough in 3 hours to give 30 seconds to the people that actually win.
Last year was 4.5 hours.
Right.
For a lot of categories that we knew who was going to win.
Right.
How many surprises did we get? We got a short film surprise.
Heaven is the Freeway on the 405.
We got a few minor surprises in there, but everything was chalk, Mike, based on the odds. Yep. We talked about it. There was no big surprises. Yes, you'll get that year with a surprise, but I think they have to muck up the voting body a little bit here so that you get more unpredictable show. And if you add something like we talked about,
every member of the Academy should have to record themselves watching every nominated film for every category and send it in to us so we can verify it. So what have we done so far to fix the programming? We agree with the hard 3-hour cap. We say there's still a way, whether via YouTube, via pre-recorded messages, I think a screen scroll or letting these guys have access to Twitter that shows their messages on right. the screen too
you
is
can,
a great idea.
You can give the best sound editor 2 minutes of an Oscars broadcast. Just hold them at 2 minutes. Don't let it balloon to 10.
I don't think we need more time for how great movies are and the history of movies.
Yeah,
and
do you need the tributes?
No.
Do you even need the skits, Mike?
The tributes we need. The in memoriam section, that type of stuff.
All right, well, that tribute. Yeah. But do you need the montage of
90 years of movie magic?
Right.
Maybe for 100 years, not 89 years of movie magic. Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you're going to have a hard 3 hours and cut out those people's moments to celebrate basically yourself.
Do you need the Ashton Kutcher punked infused skit right. in the middle of the show where they punk some audience across the street?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you need that?
Just
to show how the stars are relatable to the people.
Right. Here's Reese Witherspoon in a $7,000 Gucci dress handing out popcorn to people watching
a movie during the Oscars. Right. Those pinions.
Right. So, yeah. If you're going to have more time, don't fill it with that fodder. Do something constructive with it. I don't know what the answer is, but there has to be more than just look how great we are over these last 90 years. Categories I would add, since that's the question you asked 4 years ago now. The categories I would add, if we're adding categories now, since we have time all of a sudden to add popular film, why can't we add best stunt? Why can't we add best ensemble? Why can't we add best voice acting and breakthrough performance? I would add those four easily.
Well, I think best ensemble would diminish how elusive the Oscars tend to be. Just think about it. If you're in an Oscar-worthy ensemble and you win best ensemble, that's going to 20 actors or whatever the main slate. You know, look at the SAGs. How many of those actors
so
and actresses walk away with SAG
awards?
What about
instead of best ensemble, best casting?
Yeah, maybe by
and that
the
ca-
and the casting and she walk he or she walks
casting,
walks away
cast
with it.
Director Kit takes it.
Maybe I don't think that'll ever happen. I'm with you on best stunt work. I think that's going
to
be a
needs to be.
That's something
that's
new.
That's the
that
one
needs
I'm
to
that and breakthrough performance to me are the they should
well,
already be
breakthrough
there.
Performance like a rookie of the year. Again,
yes.
I don't think they would do it because it's diminishing how elusive Oscars should be to folks. And how hard it is to get one. You have to have everything time right and the narrative to work with you and everything work. It has to be your year, apparently. And it has to
see,
be like
you're scared of criticism yourself.
Well, they make it a crowning achievement. Yeah. I'm just saying they won't go for it. Would I like a rookie of the year? Yeah, but Oscars are so elusive for so many big name actors that would probably have a best debut film.
You wouldn't have loved a 30-second speech from Brooklyn Pierce last year for the Florida Project.
Well, Timothy Chalamet would have won it hands down last year, in our opinion, probably.
Yeah, but he was. I also don't think he was a rookie last year.
No, he wasn't. Yeah, no. But, so no. You can really make it a rookie
right.
performance. But yeah.
But those. So those are the four. Now, forget everything I've just said about the Academy Awards. Here's the thing that needs to happen, and again, it goes back to the narrative of making stories, creating controversy, having your thing be talked about year-round.
Okay.
Who isn't arguing over a category of most memorable scene? Have it be as vague as that, just the most memorable scene of the year. And who among us isn't pulling our hair out? How loud are you and I getting on a podcast arguing over the peach scene in Call Me By Your Name versus Margot Robbie staring into the mirror at I, Tonya versus Allison Williams sitting on the bed listening to Time of My Life and Get Out last year. Are we not losing our minds over this category? Is it not automatically probably one of the top 7 prestigious awards on the night? Automatically? Does it not glorify the director's vision, the actors in it, the stunt work and ensembles that went into it? Can you not have the indie films go up against the big blockbusters in this category as well?
Now, I think it would be so fun to have this category. So fun.
Tell me why
it doesn't
work.
For guys like us. The same reason the other ones don't work. You have to give out 12 Oscars for one category on one night.
No, give it to the producers.
Just the producers get it?
That's who accepts the best picture.
Why is a producer? The producer may have had a hand in the award or not. The director probably had a big hand.
I would like you to go to any executive
producer
and tell them you may have had a hand.
The visual effect. What was the star of that scene? Was it the visual effects? Was it the one actor? Was it? We say that all the time. Who steals
the
scene?
This is something the studio can have a hand in.
You know, Spike Lee's directing. Could they nominate one person for the best scene?
Why not?
Yeah, maybe
give a scene for this. particular category's consideration. Have the whoever you want on it, whether it's
it would be fun.
Director, producer.
100%.
And I don't think, I mean, how much fodder are we getting, and is the Academy getting? You want to talk about positive criticism? They get all kinds of positive criticism before the nominations are announced, just like any other category.
Mike, if the ratings this year are at 21 million, but down from 26 after this whole best popular film thingamajig, we are going to get whatever the film Twitter, whatever the consent, they're going to be desperate after this year.
The time of my life.
That's a big one. That's a big one.
So, in terms of recapping, let Mike and I have the Oscars for a year. Just let us fix it.
Let us fix it.
Yeah, we'll help you. We can help you. But listen, we laid a lot out there. Obviously, the bulk of this episode was fixing Best Picture and the Best Popular Achievement, popular film, whatever that category is. We want to know your thoughts. Obviously, a lot of us, we have heard your thoughts. We hope we gave enough credit where it was due to the ideas that we kind of wanted to cite and mention. We highlighted a couple of people along the way. Again, just as a means of recap, The Ringer has a nice piece on this and fixing the Academy. Next Best Picture did a nice episode on fixing the Academy.
Almost as long as our episode. This is a huge one.
IndieWire did a nice piece. It was long. Variety has a couple good pieces up there. So there's a lot of outlets that you guys can go to and get your fix of how to fix the Academy Awards. So you can compare our takes to theirs. Let us know if you liked anything we heard, if you didn't like. If you want to get this going, you can easily hashtag Blockbuster Threshold. I won't hate that. I would love that. Yeah, I'll partake.
Listen, yeah, we will debate you in 280 characters any day of the week, all day, every day, if you want to have a debate. If you just want to shoot the shit, then we'll do that too.
Yeah, and it's important for me that you guys know how right my take is.
Antagonizing the audience, always a good strategy. That's what the Oscars are doing right there.
Exactly. Reach out to us, guys. Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. MM and Oscar on Twitter. Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, .com, reddit.com. We're everywhere that you type in Mike, and Oscar. If you can leave us a review on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, all those Android podcasts, that Google Podcast Network. We're literally pretty much, I think, everywhere that you can find a podcast. And if we're not, and you see a place that we're not, let us know. Give us a heads up, and we'll go there too. Mm-hmm. Michael, any final words of wisdom for this behemoth of an episode? This was going to be a half episode originally.
Breaking news, Mike. They just did away with the Best Popular Film Oscar on Hollywood Reporter. Just happened.
Yeah?
No.
We're done, huh?
I'm kidding. It's still in effect. You can still
be outraged.
We
did it, guys!
You can still be outraged.
Guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us and being outraged over these new categories. We will check you all next time. Am I going to say see ya?
See ya!
Oh my god!
I thought you clicked it.